Welcome to Kidney Talk, a program of Renal Support Network, a show that streams health, happiness, and hope to the kidney community. You can download all Kidney Talk shows from iTunes and find a variety of resources to help you navigate this illness at rsnhope.org. Please welcome your host, Lori Hartwell, who has lived with kidney disease since the age of 2.
Well, welcome to Kidney Talk. I always love speaking to my fellow peers. And we have an amazing guy right now. His name is Shelby McClear. And he is going to tell us about his experiences with all the different dialysis treatments options he did before he got transplanted. So welcome to the show, Shelby.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
So tell us, when were you first diagnosed with kidney disease? How did you learn about the illness?
When it hit me. I was diagnosed maybe 4.5 years ago, somewhere around there. And my nephrologist had told me that my kidney function was decreasing. And it was believed that the medication that I was using was what was actually destroying my kidneys. So when it got to the point that dialysis was in my future, I had no idea of what dialysis entailed. You know, I've heard of it, but I didn't know what it entailed.
I don't particularly like the first word, dialysis, you know.
Right. It doesn't sound pleasant. I like the other options.
So when you first learned you had to do dialysis, you have many choices from in-center peritoneal dialysis, which is a home treatment, and home hemo, and then, of course, transplant. But you chose PD. How did you learn about that treatment option and choose that one?
Well, when it was explained to me, the option of PD, naturally, no needles. And that's the most appealing. The freedom of treating yourself at home, not having to travel to a center and being dependent on being at that center 3 times a week for 4 or 5 hours at a time. So when that was presented, that seemed to be the best option for me at that time.
Well, and it gives you more time at home, right? What do you like to do with your free time?
Right. Well, what do I like to do?
With your free time that you, yeah.
Absolutely nothing. but the options that I retired 12 years ago, I'm sorry. And I had all these ideas and goals that I wanted to do, but dialysis interfered with that because you don't have the same level of mobility. And I had some other medical issues as well. But PD was explained to me that you would treat at night as you sleep. That was great because that allowed you to not be tied to a machine for whatever length of time, which generally I believe was about 8 hours a day.
Uh-huh.
So your day wasn't tied up being tied to a machine.
Right. Well, because you go to the center and then, you know, by the time that you transport there and it's a long day when you go to the center.
Very, very long.
It's a long day. So how long did you do PD and what was it like?
I did PD for right around 3 years, 2.5, 3 years. And like anything, when it comes to medical treatment, it's not fun. But it is, PD is the least invasive, in my opinion. You know, if you don't like needles, you know, it works the best. You hook yourself up to your machine at night and you go to sleep. And in the morning, you disconnect.
Well, I was on PD for 9 years.
Wow.
So I totally get you with no needles because I don't have a lot of good veins. You know, I'm not a good candidate for vascular accesses. So PD really did save my life because I didn't have to have accesses during those years of treatment. So tell me a little bit about, PD started to not work for you as much?
Correct. I wasn't meeting goals, you know, the level of blood cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't meeting that goal. So it was determined that my body was not working with the effectiveness of the system to continue to be a viable means for me.
Well, it's really sad, but our peritoneal cavity takes a beating sometimes after being on PD so long, and it doesn't absorb or clear. It doesn't filter as well. So, so they gave you the discussion. You could go in center or home hemo and stick yourself. So, how did that come about? And how did you come through that conclusion that, you know what, I'm going to have to stick myself?
I would say that the convenience of being at home was the most appealing aspect of the whole home hemo. But the downside, and there's something that's just adverse to your psyche, to take a big needle and stick yourself with two needles four times a week. But the options are so limited in the sense that you want to live a long life. And when it's presented that you can have a numbing cream, which makes it a lot more tolerable to access your access. And it wasn't that bad. I'm a big scaredy cat when it comes to needles. But over time, you get used to it. You're trained. You're comfortable with the system. And it worked great for me.
Now, what kind of access do you have? Do you have a fistula
or
a graft? A fistula. Oh, that's wonderful, because those are the best access you can have.
Yes.
Is a fistula. And so where is your fistula located?
On my right arm.
On your right. Is it lower or upper?
Upper. It's
okay.
Right in the bend of my elbow, and then it reaches up to my bicep in two spots.
Wow.
I have no issues with it. I've had to have vascular where they've had to widen some of the area because I have very narrow veins. But I had no complications and no real issues with it at all.
Are you left-handed?
No, I'm right-handed.
Oh, but, that's interesting.
Yeah, but when I got the fistula, it wasn't presented to me that, hey, do you want your offhand? And it wasn't explained at all.
Oh, usually that doctor needs a talking to.
Right,
because usually they ask which arm is dominant and go for the other arm.
Right.
So you learn to use your left hand to cannulate yourself.
Yes, which for me, it wasn't bad to do it. But after learning that how the process works, of course, it should have been on my offhand.
Right.
Because, yeah, accessing would have been easier. But I didn't really incur any issues. I guess I'm not, as they say, even-handed. But it didn't present a problem.
What was training like? Did you go to the center for a while for training?
Yes.
What was that process like?
It was wonderful for me because the staff was so, I don't want to say fun, but they were a great team of nurses and my doctor. They were a great team. Everybody in that office. And it made the process a lot easier to deal with. Because any issues that you may have mentally about the process, they were able to encourage you, explain what you may go through. So the process itself was not bad at all.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that because I don't know about you, but when I walk into a doctor's office or any type of clinic, I can tell immediately the energy in the room. And when, you know, isn't it true?
Yeah.
And if there's a jovial kind of energy, it just makes me not feel as much stress about being there.
100%, yes.
But when they're kind of like, you could feel the tension if they're not getting along or something, mm-hmm. You're like, uh-oh.
100%. There have been experiences in the medical field where you feel like a cow going through a processing plant. It's very sterile, but this was very pleasant. And the nurses, they're trained to recognize what a patient may be experiencing because they're always looking at you, watching you, trying to make sure you're comfortable. If you have any questions, if you're going through any issues, they're right there to kind of assist you through that transition. So for me, it was a very good experience, all things considered.
Well, with home hemo, now where do you do your home hemo treatment? In your house?
When I did it, it was in my bedroom.
Okay.
Yes, yes. Because I'm a night person, and I would do my treatment late at night. And it worked fine for me. I had no issues. I have a bathroom in the master bedroom, so I didn't have a long drain line running from the bedroom to the bathroom. So I incurred no problems, actually.
Now, do you do solo home hemo, or do you have a care partner?
Well, up until January of this year, I did home hemo, and I didn't have a care partner. For me, that wasn't a problem. For a lot of people, I understand that they'll have a care partner, and that makes it so much easier on the patient.
It is a lot of work.
Yes.
I mean, I did it for a year. And it is, it's all a lot of work, because the biggest thing is, where do you put all the supplies?
Right.
You know, you got to find a place. And I think we should get a certificate after we graduate from dialysis on shipping and receiving, don't you?
I mean, most definitely.
We're like qualified to have a Amazon job, right?
100%, because my living room just became a mini warehouse.
Oh, wow.
When it came to ED, you know, you have 35 boxes of solution and supplies. And with home hemo, was a lot better, because instead of half my living room being taken up, there was just maybe like a 4-drawer storage cabinet, and that contained all of my necessary supplies. So it made it much better to deal with. Home hemo, in my opinion, is the best.
Did they have an RO system? Is that how it worked for the water fluid? How did you deal with, do you have to hang the bags for your machine?
It's a purification system. There's a drain line, there's a water line, and you would make your batch, as they would describe it. Yes. And it's a lot better than the hanging bags, in my opinion.
Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, I'm only 4'10", and I had to hang the 2-liter bags, or I could do over 2-liter. I was just, it's you get a workout, that's for sure. So how did you cope emotionally with all this? What did you do to help yourself cope during, you know, the time when you're sitting on the machine and you're like, God, I'd rather be at the game?
Well, for me, I had a tablet. And I could watch movies, videos, books. I had my radio. So there was always something to occupy that time. And over time, that 4 hours that the treatment would last, it didn't bother me at all. But you find ways to kind of occupy yourself. You might snack a little. So once you have your little system in place and you have everything set up the way you like, it's not that big of a deal.
You learn to adjust and you watch your favorite TV shows.
Exactly. Exactly.
So how did you learn about transplants? So when was it first presented, and how did that come about to get evaluated?
Well, again, my nephrologist, when I was getting to the point where my kidney function was, you know, almost kaput, he had sent me to kidney failure training that they put on at the local hospital. And that kind of brought you up to speed on what to expect, what was in your future. And that was very helpful. That's something that, in my opinion, should be presented much earlier to give you an idea of what you can expect. And actually, it should be presented maybe years before you have kidney failure for people that are non-compliant. Maybe that'll scare them into becoming compliant before they need dialysis. But I was well prepared. And so you have an idea of what to expect once that's exposed to you. And then over time, you're processing all of that information. So when the day does come, it's like, okay, here it is, and this is what I expect to happen. So it makes it a lot easier. because you're already psychologically prepared for it.
Now, how long did you wait? Did you get a deceased donor or a living donor?
It was a deceased donor, and I had to wait a few years, but I got a bump or credit, weight credit. You know, they give you a credit for time.
On dialysis prior to...
Yes, yeah. So that sped up the process, I guess, a little bit, but it was a deceased donor. The donor, from my understanding, they were alive and they had to have a procedure. And I don't know all the dynamics of that. But when I got the call, it was in January of this year. I didn't expect to get a kidney because I had been called in the past and they would tell me, oh, you're four on the, well, you're number two in line. So be on standby. And then it would always fall through. Mm-hmm. So this last time they called me, they told me I was number four in line. So I'm like, they're really wasting my time here. And they said, well, somebody will call you in the middle of the night. And then that didn't happen. And then early in the morning, I got a call and they said, how long does it take you to get here? And I said, oh, it's an hour drive. And they said, well, can you be here in an hour? And I was like, well, I was asleep. So I know I can't be there in an hour, but I can get there as quick as I can. So when I got there, it was maybe an hour and 45 minutes after the call, hour and 30 minutes. And I'm just expecting to hear them say, turn around and go home. And they said, we're going to do a couple of tests and then we're going to prepare you for surgery.
You didn't have time to get the nerves going, did you?
Right. It was so quick. I remember they did a chest x-ray and a couple of other tests. So that took a few hours. And they were tests that I had previously done as a annual recertification. Uh-huh. So once that was out of the way, it was pretty much here. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And then here, we're going to give you some medication to relax you. And then when we bring you into the OR, we'll knock you out.
Who was the first person you called saying, hey, I'm getting a kidney?
I don't remember. It may have been my son or my mother.
Yeah, saying, hey, I'm going for it.
Yeah.
So it was pretty, I mean, It's often interesting because some people wait days because kidneys can, sometimes a person's on life support and so it can take much longer. But I think you got the best case scenario. So you didn't have time to get nervous. And then the other problem is they tell you not to eat. So, so you got the kidney quick. So you didn't have to watch TV and see all the commercials come up about food.
Right. At that point, anything would look good.
Yes. So you got the kidney and you wake up. Did it work right away? Was it like ready to go?
It was probably working before they connected it. That kidney immediately was producing so much urine. I was shocked. Because I was expecting, you know, like they inform you, there's a wake-up time. Sometimes it may take a day or several hours, and you still may have to do a dialysis treatment until that point. It was instant.
How much weight did you lose? How much? I mean, that's the craziest thing, is because after you get a transplant, you don't realize how much fluid you have on you.
Right. Well, I lost plenty. I lost at least 15 pounds, possibly more, because my stomach, it wasn't flat, but it was like, wow, I haven't seen my stomach like that in a long, long time. My pants, even with my belt in the last hole, they were still falling off of me. I was like, wow.
You have to go out and get a new wardrobe, don't you?
No, I just started eating again.
My goodness.
With some of the medications, you have to have enough food on your stomach to kind of deal with the medication side effects because there's the medication, for me at least, made my stomach very sensitive. And I learned over time that the more food I would have on my stomach, the less the effects of the medication were.
You know what? One of my favorite foods to eat is when my stomach is upset is applesauce. Applesauce is such...
That didn't work for me. Right.
It didn't work for you?
No, but people, that's their go-to because it kind of coats the stomach and it allows them, especially in the morning, to take their morning medications.
So how did you feel after transplant? Did you feel a big difference in your energy level or?
It was very noticeable. It's just like when you're first in stage, like renal failure, you finally recognize how tired you are and how much energy you no longer have. It's the same with the transplant. You instantly notice that you have more energy, you're starting to feel better, and that's surprising, but it's a great feeling.
You don't realize, because it's such a slow process, you forget how bad you feel.
Right.
Correct. It just becomes your new normal.
Correct.
And so, and you know, and it's interesting because I've had 4 transplants.
Oh.
And my first 2 didn't work, but my 3rd one lasted 20 years. And then my 4th one's been 14 years.
Wow.
And so people always ask me, why did I get my 3rd, you know, because of not having, and I'm like, you know, dialysis is always waiting for me. I can always do that, but I can't always get a transplant. And my first 2 transplants were before technology took place, you know, like all the great, you know, that nobody wanted them back in when I first got the first 2. But it's such a gift. You know, I always like to think about how grateful I am to, you know, all the people involved who donated a kidney. Do you know anything about your donor?
Very, very little. They told me after a year that if the family is willing, that I would be able to communicate with them and maybe get some of my questions answered. I believe my donor was a female. I think she was around my age. As long as I don't start painting my nails and getting a perm, I think I'll be okay. But I haven't noticed any personality changes.
I know. Or
anything like that. I would love to know her story. I would really love to know her story. But I'm thankful.
I would make a joke that I got a deceased donor from a male, and you know, I started to leave the toilet seat up. I was kidding.
Right. And he bought a razor because there was this incredible error.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
But no.
So, you know, what do you do to help advocate and educate others now? I have to tell you, Shelby, I can't tell how old you are. You said you're retired, but you look about 42 to me, or 46. I don't know what face cream you use, but I'm sitting here doing the math. Like, you look very young.
I was born in 61. I'll be 64 in November, Lord willing.
Oh, okay. Well, you don't look 64.
Thank you. Maybe compared to what I looked like at 40 something, I look 64. But
maybe.
No, yeah. Yeah,
I know it was. So what, how do you help advocate for others and, you know, to learn about kidney disease now that you know about it a little bit more?
Well, now, you know, it's a talking point whenever you meet somebody. For example, I had to go back to vascular while I was still on home hemo because my access was narrow. And while I was there, I wind up talking to a couple of gentlemen that were in the vascular center getting surgery. And we talked and they had a ton of questions. And it was just always, you know, what to expect and that it's better than the options. Because you always hear of people that say, well, I'll just die. They're non-compliant with treatment or they don't want to go through that process for whatever reason. But these gentlemen, they were very eager to receive information. They had a lot of questions, and they were my age range. The only thing now I tell people is take care of yourself, you know, because you don't know. Sometimes it's not in your power. It has nothing to do with diet. It has nothing to do with behavior. It can just be a medical issue. You know, it can be organic in the sense that you have no control over it. But I believe in the majority of cases, it's diet and behavior. And those are the people you try to reach in some kind of way deep down inside and explain, hey, you don't want to do this if you can prevent it. If you can prevent it, there's nothing better than your body, your organs functioning properly. But if you abuse yourself and you get to the point that you have to be on dialysis, you're going to look back and say, wow, had I treated myself properly, I wouldn't be in this position. Because dialysis is not without its issues. It's just the only...
It's a treatment.
Right.
It's a treatment.
Exactly.
It's a treatment. It's a treatment. And, you know, you can go on and on and on. We're very lucky to have the treatment options. Some countries don't have it.
Right.
So what do you look forward to in the future?
Just hopefully living a long, healthy life. But I really want to see an improvement in kidney awareness. You know, it's something that you don't think about. And I can tell you stories of people that I've known over the years, you know, guys that you may go to lunch with, and especially with men. They grab the salt shaker off the table and they just start shaking. Even before they taste their food, they automatically are dumping salt on top of an unknown. And if you protect your body a little more, you'll have so much more quality of life. We can't guarantee longevity, but we can guarantee quality of life when it comes to the things that we can control.
Well, I'm curious. Do you like to cook?
Well, I used to. I used to love to bake. Years ago, I got out of cooking. Well, I cook out of necessity. I don't enjoy it anymore. You know, I used to love to cook and I love to bake, you know, but that was a long time ago.
I know, because restaurant food is so salty. But interesting, with my blood pressure, I actually have a low sodium. I actually have to eat salt with my kidney. Wow. I mean, wow. It's so weird. It's like,
yeah.
I've never experienced before, but this kidney works so well that it doesn't matter if I eat salt at all. So
yeah, that's great.
It's everybody's different, but I don't use.
Different.
But having said that, I never pick up the salt shaker. So, okay. You know, so it just, food has so much sodium in it anyways.
Correct. Yes. And salt actually kind of damages your taste buds. And over time, you require more and more sodium in order to taste the effects of sodium.
Right.
So if you stay away from salt, you start to naturally taste the true taste of food. Yeah, and there's other ways to season your food that has a positive impact on your body.
Right. There was a famous doctor, Dr. Spalding Scribner, who was a grandfather of dialysis, and he said that if you stop sodium or limit sodium for 21 days, you will lose the taste for it. Because
wow.
sodium makes you thirsty, too.
Right, yes.
You know, it's so wonderful to hear your story, Shelby.
Thank you.
And, you know, you went from being diagnosed to PD to home hemo to transplant. And I'd like to ask everybody this. What's your creatinine?
Right now it's 2.4, which is higher than it should be. But I'm learning that for me, initially, when you start dialysis, whether it's PD or home hemo, you're fluid restricted. So you get into that mindset of, I may only have 32 or 40 ounces of fluid a day.
You got to learn to drink.
Right. And now with the kidney, they're telling you just the opposite of what you had before. drink. And they mean water. And I'm not at that point yet where I'm drinking 90 ounces of water a day, you know, 100 ounces of water. But I notice when I do get to that level, my creatinine drops much faster.
Well, I encourage you to drink, and it is very challenging, but I do want to give you my third kidney. I left the hospital with a 2.2 creatinine.
Wow.
And they said I would get a few years with that kidney. This was back in the 90s.
Okay.
And that kidney lasted 20 years.
Wow.
So I thought I'd just give you that story. I mean,
thank you.
You know, I just took care of myself, but drinking is really important, and you got to go get your Stanley Cup, okay? Go get your Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
and drink that water. Well, Shelby, it's been wonderful to talk to you. You have such a great, wonderful attitude, and I just loved hearing your story. So we'll go get a drink. We'll both go get a big bottle of water right now and celebrate our gift of life.
Amen. Yes. Yes. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Kidney Talk, a program of Renal Support Network. Please make sure to find us on Facebook or sign up for our newsletter at rsnhope.org. Kidney Talk is intended for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment from your physician. Always seek the advice of your own healthcare provider regarding your medical condition.